On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Now, this weekend, as we know, we've been marking Pride, and it's a time not only to reflect on society now, but also the journey that has been taken and how far we've come. And in the history of the criminalisation of homosexuality, there is, of course, one Irish name that leaps forward, that of Oscar Wilde. But even before Oscar Wilde, there was an Irish MP embroiled in a deep scandal that shocked Westminster, even resulting in this person fleeing the country to escape the charges of gross indecency that were being taken against him. His name was Edward de Cobain. He was an Irish Conservative MP. Once upon a time, he was the Grand Master of Belfast's Orange Lodge, but he became the centre of a homosexual scandal that shook Victorian politics and society. And if you're thinking that is a story that only Donal Fallon could tell properly, you are correct. Donal, this is a real gem that you've pulled out this week. But I suppose we should start on a slightly more sombre note, which is worth saying that tens of thousands of men who were convicted of gross indecency in Britain have since been pardoned.
Yeah, and there's an old saying that justice delayed is justice denied, which is very true. Mm. And in 2017, the British state posthumously pardoned thousands upon thousands of men, 49,000 men who were convicted of gross indecency with another man. And of course, again, far too late for the men themselves, but it mattered as a kind of symbolic act. And there's a lot of martyrs in this story, you know, in the popular collective memory around gay rights, people whose graves and monuments have taken on great importance in an Irish context. As you mentioned in the introduction, it's Oscar Wilde. You know, gay bookshops, community centres across the world named after Oscar. In Britain, there's the tragic story of Alan Turing, English mathematician, the father of theoretical computer science and AI, crucially important in tackling and cracking Nazi Germany's coding, and then later found guilty of gross indecency. He endured a horrific treatment, chemical castration, and went on to take his own life. So Alan Turing and Oscar Wilde, they both now kind of exist as much as symbols of progress. You know, they often use Oscar's imagery around things like the gay film and theatre festival, around Pride itself. But they're kind of, if you will, they're kind of liberal icons of progress. Yeah. This story today is very, very different.
Yeah, Alan Turing on the new £50 note in the Bank of England as well. So Wilde and Turing have become sort of liberal icons, but maybe the reason why we don't hear very much about our protagonist today is that he could never be considered to be a liberal icon, because in his own time, he was anything but.
Absolutely. And synonymous with institutions that are historically thought of as being deeply hostile to homosexuality. So Edward de Cobain is the son of a firebrand reverend, born in 1840, becomes the Grand Master of the Orange Order in Belfast, not an organisation famous for their, you know, tolerant approach to others. And he builds a career as an Irish Conservative MP in Westminster. But he does it not by kind of building bridges and trying to create a more tolerant Ulster, but by exploiting differences that exist there. He's a Protestant parliamentarian for a Protestant people. The worst kind of MP, at literally the worst kind of moment. You know, Britain is a tinderbox. The Home Rule Bill is there on the table, Gladstone's 1886 Home Rule Bill. And one historian has described de Cobain brilliantly as developing a reputation for being something of an orangist bulldog. I mean, that's a brilliant description. But the view of this guy, de Cobain, and those around him, was, you know, the same as that which would emerge later on in the crisis, in the revolutionary period, you know, the days of Carson. He basically believed Home Rule is Rome Rule. Mighty industrial Belfast will never bow to your popish parliament on College Green, you know, financially crippled Dublin. And Belfast is every bit as British as the London Parliament, he said.
So you mentioned Home Rule, and the 1880s is the time when all of that kicks off, and you have the first of many aborted attempts to try and have devolved rule again in Dublin. De Cobain's fingerprints are all over a series of riots that there are in Belfast around that time. And there's one instance in which he even tries to turn a crowd against the police,
which is extraordinary stuff. I mean, it brings to mind kind of populist politics in our own times. Riots erupt in Belfast in 1886. People are very frightened at the prospect of Home Rule happening, the rise of the Irish Parliamentary Party as they see it. Mm. And these riots kick off in the shipyards of Belfast. They discover that Home Rule isn't happening. So the riots turn into this very strange thing, which sounds like an oxymoron, but they become kind of celebration riots. You know, they're what they
feel like a post Stanley Cup riot in America,
and
that kind of
rubbing
thing.
The nose of your neighbours in it. You know, you're not getting Home Rule, and they go on to riot. But de Cobain doesn't condemn the rioters in Belfast. He condemns the Royal Irish Constabulary, who were sent in to stop the riots. And most of the men they bring in are from other parts of the island of Ireland. So they're big, burly Catholic policemen. Mm. And, you know, he plays the sectarian card. You know, he tells people in the streets of Belfast that, you know, these are being brought in to suppress our rights. He slanders the police. It's entirely sectarian. He pours petrol on the fire. And when there's later an inquiry into the Belfast riots, they finger this guy for the blame and say newspapers are so easily obtained that our workmen can read them in the evenings and become thoroughly posted in these matters. So he had, you know, put it into the heads of working class Belfast Protestants that the police were up against them.
But obviously you don't do this sort of thing. You're not able to turn the people against the police unless you are highly popular. And he himself had massive support from Belfast workers, or at least if not all the Belfast workers, the ones he thought of as the right kind to try and cultivate.
He's the MP for Belfast East, you know, which is the centre of kind of working class Protestant Belfast. And he supports kind of trade unionism and workers' rights in the city, providing they're the right kind of workers. So the union he backs is called the Belfast Orange and Protestant Working Men's Association. So yeah, it does exactly.
He's not been very coy about who he's trying to cultivate there, is he?
It does exactly what it says on the tin. You know, it's not exactly influenced by the gospel of Karl Marx, "Workers of all countries unite." It's much more King William of Orange, and it's about protecting Protestant jobs for Protestant workers. So there's rarely been an MP who was so gung-ho about his convictions. I mean, this guy did everything short of wearing an Orange Order sash into Parliament to say what he was, and I think more importantly to say, you know, what he wasn't. And there were a whole host of people on the other side of Parliament in Westminster who hated this guy. You know, the Parnellites, they were looking for home rule for Ireland, but also Conservatives. I think there's nothing Conservatives hate more. You know, they regarded themselves as, you know, above that kind of politics.
Yeah.
Significant landowners, respectful men up against, you know, the Fenians across the
way. We don't do this kind of rabble-rousing.
We don't do this kind of rabble-rousing. So that's the world of politics that Cobain mixed in and engaged with.
Protestant jobs for Protestant workers. I'd love if people could text in 53106 and decide what a Protestant job is. It's like someone who's trying to build a machine that stops transubstantiation. I don't know. Despite all of what you've been saying, there is still shock then when the story does break of de Cobain being sought by the police, the same police that he tried to turn the mobs against, on account of homosexuality.
Even the most hostile of opponents, you know, the most firebrand nationalists, were taken by surprise. April 1891, a warrant is issued by Richard Eaton, who's the resident magistrate of Belfast, and de Cobain is charged with the commission of unnatural offences in Belfast. And I don't think he helps his case by immediately doing a runner. You know, he fled via
He's
London.
He's not going to fight this one in the dock, you know?
Yeah, via London to France, onwards to the United States, proclaiming his innocence, but saying, look, I can't get a fair trial. And he writes a letter to a fellow MP and says, when first elected for East Belfast, I stood as a working man's candidate, but publicly avowing as my two principles to help extend the privileges of the working classes and to advance the temperance cause. My attitude in relation to both these questions gave moral umbrage, the first to a clique, the latter to the present government. In other words, I'm innocent, and the rumour mill has been designed to bring down an MP. But you don't help that argument by running away. So the House of Commons, they order him to show up, and when he doesn't, he's expelled in February 1892. Yeah. It takes a lot to get yourself expelled from the British House of Commons.
Yeah.
He manages to do it.
The rumour mill designed to bring down an MP, but nobody has to leak some videos of a minister's private quarters in order to do it. He goes on the run, as you've mentioned. He completely flees despite maintaining his innocence. He shows up in Brooklyn.
It's amazing. He pops up in Brooklyn, New York, and the Illustrated American, they write about this. They say, Edward de Cobain, who fled from England to avoid trial on the charges of immoral practices and was expelled from Parliament, has turned up in Brooklyn, where he was found conducting religious revival services.
So what else would he be doing?
Banging the Bible, you know. His identity was not suspected at first, and he won favour by his elegance. He says he's innocent and tries to explain his failure to return and stand trial by saying the police have arranged to convict him on false evidence. And when he eventually does go back to Belfast in February 1893, unsurprisingly, he's immediately arrested.
So he goes over there to bash the Bible and presumably, you know, points to chapter 18 of Leviticus and says, yeah, all of this, yeah, you should definitely honour all of this. The trial, when he does eventually stand trial after he goes back to Belfast and gets arrested, it does see a number of witnesses being brought forward, and there's some fairly graphic descriptions of sexual activity. Obviously, we're not going to repeat them now on Lunchtime Radio. He insists that he's innocent, but it's fairly damning stuff.
And it's the stuff of high drama. It's the dream. If there was a tabloid press in the day, they would have loved it. You know, numerous witnesses give evidence. One ends, he told me not to mention it for peril of my life, and that he would nominate me there and then. And the historian Cal Murphy, who's done the most work on this, writes that he's charged on 10 counts of gross indecency with 8 young men in Belfast over a period of 3 years from 1887 to 1890. So when he is an MP, this is damning stuff. But again, his line is, this is an organised attempt to ruin me. It's political jealousy. It does seem some people were paid to help encourage them to give statements against him.
Okay.
But it's always the case on a not guilty plea that there'll always remain mysteries. Mm. You don't know, but the jury finds him guilty. He gets 12 months imprisonment with hard labour. And it's deeply embarrassing for Jordan Jordan and indeed for unionism in a broader sense.
And I'm sure, given all those sort of historical clouds, then there would be people who point back to the fact that he instigated riots against the police and then wondered if suddenly the police, still largely a big beefy Catholic police force, had just decided that they were now out to get him and that he was the victim of some kind of conspiracy that way. Just to take a wider view and to put this into kind of a context timeline wise, this all happens before Oscar Wilde, and in some ways actually even more so than Oscar Wilde, it's kind of a bigger case in sections of society.
Yeah, and anyone who kind of knows about this guy, Edward de Cabane, they normally just know of him because he's a passing sentence in most biographies of Oscar Wilde. You know, they'll say there was a case before Oscar.
Okay.
But it's deeply embarrassing to Ulster Unionist opinion because not for the first or last time, indeed even in our own lifetime, a leading face of a cause that prides itself on its kind of religious devotion, its social conservatism, is found to be acting in contradiction to that. I mean, Oscar Wilde fell much harder a few years later, but Wilde was regarded as a total outsider. He's a dandy, he's a bohemian, he's the son of a militant Irish nationalist who kind of infiltrates London society. He says famously, "I am not English, I'm Irish," which is quite another thing. They never liked Wilde. They regarded Wilde as a showman and something of a social freak. Yeah,
but he's very hand on his sleeve and heart on his sleeve about being an outsider in several senses.
Absolutely. And he loves it and he embraces it. De Cobain, by comparison, is a very, very different case.
So much has changed since, obviously, and that is what is being marked and celebrated this weekend. And a lot has changed, including in De Cobain's political base. Decriminalisation there happened in 1982, which was early on this island, but very late by British context.
Yeah, and I think it is important to remember. I mean, on one level, we hear stories like this and think, you know, good enough for them. But if you believe in certain rights and wrongs in society, you apply them, you know, equally to all, regardless of their position. Mm. And what happened to Cobain was every bit as wrong as what happened to Oscar Wilde. But you do have to ask, what would this guy make of contemporary Ulster if he could walk the streets now? Because, yeah, as you said, in some ways, the North was ahead of us. Same-sex sexual activity legal since 82. In other ways, it lagged behind. You know, same-sex marriage came only in 2020, which was a long, long, long journey for the North. But I think there's probably no better weekend to remind listeners of this. The sexual scandals can still bring down Westminster MPs, he said, as Matt Hancock packs his desk into boxes as we speak. But when we think of Ireland in the past, 19th century Ireland, one scandal comes to mind, you know, poor Charles Stuart Parnell, the uncrowned king of Ireland. But, you know, Edward de Cobain, he saw plenty of newspapers in his day too. And while he hated Parnell and Parnell hated him, and they agreed on absolutely nothing. I was going to say they probably agreed in the time of day, but I doubt that because we still had Dublin Mean Time.
We did, so yeah. We were 25 minutes behind them.
Probably didn't even agree on the time of day. But they do share the dubious honour, Parnell and Edward de Cobain, of disgraced MPs.
I was going to make a joke there about how, you know, one part of Ireland is 25 minutes and several hundreds of centuries behind the other, but I'm not even sure which part of the island is which there, so I'd better park that one. Donald Fallon, as ever, that's among the favourite slots that you've ever brought in, just because it's a name that you don't hear in this corner of the country very much at all, but it's a reminder of just how prevalent some of these struggles were in all different manners of society back in the day, and fascinating stuff as ever. Donald Fallon, author, historian. He is the author of the Come Here To Me books and also now of Henrietta Street, from Tenement to Suburbia, available in all good bookshops now. He's also the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast, anywhere you find your audio online.
On the Record
with Gavin Riley
on News Talk.